We are continuing in our series called Uprising. We're actually in the home stretch now of this series. Just a couple of weeks left before we launch into Christmas stuff. I know. Yeah, I know. I'm not even going to tell you how many shopping days are left for Christmas because I don't know and I don't want to know. I don't need to have that information. How many? 53? Some of you guys are like on it right now. Does anybody have an app on their phone that's counting down the days?
No.
You do? Yeah, that's how you know, right? All right. That's a special kind of sickness. All right. Last week, we talked about generosity and how generosity is key to our lives. And one of the things that we said was that if you and I are to experience this soul revolution that we are that we're kind of chasing after during this series, we need to wrestle down the fact that God desires us to be generous people. And what we said a few weeks before was that generosity is something that flows out of gratitude and wholeness. You and I need to live grateful lives. We need to be aware of the fact that God is speaking and doing things in our lives that we need to be aware of. It's so easy to just kind of go through the normal breathe in, breathe out of every day and miss the places where God has blessed us and forget to be grateful for those things. And out of gratefulness, there comes this sense of wholeness. That's where we were a couple weeks ago. That God desires us not to live broken lives, but to live lives that are whole, lives that are complete. And that wholeness is found in relationship with Him. And when we live grateful lives and we experience wholeness, generosity flows out of that. And what we said, one of the things that we said last week is that generosity is something that God puts in front of us that is primarily for us. God doesn't need us to be generous for Him. He needs us to be generous for us. Because when we are generous, there is a greater sense that the world is about more than just us. We are no longer living just for us. We're not saving or we're not spending just for us. There is a greater sense that something more is going on beyond our own four walls of the lives that we live. So that's kind of where we landed last week, that when we give our time, our money, it changes us. And God needs us to be generous, not just for His sake, but for us. I think last week there was a piece of the story that I was telling you last week that I left off. If you were here last week, you remember there was a young lady that I met last week up at Central Michigan. She is a waitress at Bennigan's in Mount Pleasant there. And she was telling me about, there was another young waitress that was working a night that she was working as well. And there was a big group that came in, and this other young lady got assigned this big table. Now, if you've ever waited tables, you know that big tables can suck all of your time, and sometimes they do not tip all that well. And she found out, not only that, was she having this big table of it seems like there were double-digit people easily at this table. So not only did she get that table, but she found out that they were some sort of church group. And she is kind of hostile towards church and God and Jesus and anybody that claims to be a Jesus follower. She's not a fan. And that just soured her attitude the rest of the night. And this young lady that was telling me this story, she said she was kind of grousing about it the whole night. And at the end of the night, and she was just certain she was going to get stiffed, and they're taking all my time, and every time I go by there, somebody needs a drink, somebody needs more bread, somebody's food isn't right, all those kind of things that just attend to waiting tables. At the end of the night, she goes over to the table and sees a big pile of money. And she catches one of the people who's leaving the table, and she says, is this right? You already paid your bill. You don't have to pay your bill again. And this guy said, no, this is what we do. We took up a lot of your time tonight. We want to bless you. We just pooled all of our money, and this is for you. This is a thanks for a job well done. And she was kind of blown away. So she kind of gathers up the money and takes it in the back and counts it, and there's over $400 there. When we are generous as people of God, it tears down the story that says God's people are stingy. I want to continue to encourage and challenge you that there are opportunities for us to be generous all over the place. And we need to be willing to respond to those opportunities. We need not look those in the face and say, well, you know, I'm really not all that interested. We need to respond to that kind of stuff. So today, we're going to begin this final quest of enlightenment. We've been on three different quests, and they've been 3 weeks each that we've kind of been following this quest of one thing or another, nobility and honor. And today we begin the final piece of the quest for enlightenment. And enlightenment is one of those words that carries a lot of weight with it. And sometimes, especially if you're a Christian, if you're a Christ follower, that word enlightenment has maybe some baggage that you don't want to attach. Anybody, when you hear the word enlightenment, you think of like New Age stuff? I mean, that's kind of where my mind goes to immediately is, oh boy, here we go. I knew there's something wrong with that guy. He's going to start talking about New Age stuff, and he's not really a Jesus guy at all. I mean, that is some of the baggage that word carries with it. But really, enlightenment is about moving from maybe some cloudy understanding to clarity. Enlightenment is about moving from doubt and fear to confidence. Enlightenment is about moving out of darkness and into light, out of confusion into clarity. And this is really, this is a word that maybe the New Age movement has kind of adopted, but it is a word that reflects what Jesus comes to do in our lives, bring us enlightenment, bring clarity to us. So I'm going to give you just kind of the upshot of where we're going to land. This would be like a Quentin Tarantino movie. We're going to start at the end, and we're going to work our way back to the beginning. In 2 weeks, we're going to end with wisdom. We're going to talk about what it means to have wisdom and where godly wisdom comes from. Anybody need more wisdom? All of us at some point should have our hands up because none of us have landed it entirely, right? There are times in our lives when we need greater amounts of wisdom. So we're going to talk about landing greater godly wisdom in 2 weeks. And then next week we're going to talk about what this idea of perseverance. That God puts things in front of us that we need to walk through, that we need to continue to move through and not just stay put. A famous psalm that is often used at funerals. Psalm 23, when I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. That psalm indicates movement through the valley. And some of you maybe are walking through a valley right now. And the temptation is, and the feeling, the overwhelming feeling may be, I can't continue. I cannot keep going. This is what my life is going to be like, so I might as well sit down. The psalmist says that we are to keep moving. That is perseverance. In the midst of the valley of the shadow of death is that we continue to move. That God is drawing us out of those difficult and troubling times, knowing that God has something greater in mind for us. Today we're going to talk about faithfulness, and that's going to lead us towards perseverance and ultimately wisdom where we will end. But today we're going to talk about faithfulness. And in fact, we're going to be in the same section of story that we were last week, Luke chapter 19. So if you have your Bibles, you want to go to that spot. If you remember from last week, if you were here with us, you know that we talked about Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus is that strange, odd little man that is found in the tree as Jesus goes by. And Jesus invites him to come down out of the tree. And then Jesus invites himself over to Zacchaeus' house. And what we said last week as we talked about generosity is when Zacchaeus has this encounter with Jesus, it changes everything about Zacchaeus' life. It changes everything. There is this eruption of generosity that comes out of this contact with Jesus. And then we're going to continue the story. That part of the story where we ended last week was in verse 10. We're going to pick up the story immediately after Zacchaeus' kind of proclamation of what he's going to do. Because Zacchaeus says, any people that I have wronged, people that I have stolen from, that I have treated poorly, I'm going to pay them back four times the amount that I owe them. And so Jesus captures the moment in verse 11. It says this, while they were listening to this, he went on to tell them a parable because he was near Jerusalem and the people thought that the kingdom of God was going to appear at once. Just a sidebar. Ever been around somebody that every time the wind changes, they're like, all right, Jesus is coming back. It's now. It's today, right? This is who Jesus is with right now. They were expecting the return of the king immediately. Verse 12. A man, this is Jesus talking now, he said, a man of noble birth went to a distant country to have himself appointed king and then to return. Interesting, we'll come back to that. So then he called 10 of his servants and gave them 10 minas. Now minas is about 3 months' wage, so it's a hefty amount of money, a fairly decent sum that he's giving them. And then he tells them, put this money to work, he said, until I come back. But the subjects hated him and sent a delegation after him, saying, we don't want this man to be our king. He was made king, however, and returned home. Then he sent for the servants to whom he had given the money in order to find out what they had gained with it. Verse 16, the first one came and said, sir, your mina has earned 10 more. Well done, my good servant, his master replied, because you have been trustworthy in a very small matter. Take charge of 10 cities. The second came and said, sir, your mina has earned 5 more. His master answered, take charge of 5 cities. Verse 20, then another servant came and said, sir, here is your mina. I have kept it hid away in a piece of cloth. I was afraid of you because you are a hard man. You take out what you did not put in and reap what you did not sow. His master replied, I will judge you by your own words, you wicked servant. You knew, did you, that I am a hard man and taking out what I did not put in, reaping what I did not sow. Why then didn't you put my money on deposit so that when I came back, I could have collected it with interest? Then he said to those standing by, take his mina away from him and give it to the one who has 10 minas. Sir, they said, he already has 10. He replied, I tell you that everyone who has more will be given more, but as for the one who has nothing, even what he has will be taken away. Now, this is, at first glance, one of the difficult teachings of Jesus. If you look for some answers through commentaries and things that have been around for a long time, the answers are not plentiful because this is a hard passage to understand. What is it that Jesus is driving at? So there are some big dots that we can connect in this story. The king that goes to appoint himself as king in another country is Jesus. This is the picture that Jesus is starting to paint. That is that God has created the world and everything in it, and he sends Jesus to become king of the people. Now, this is a big point of contention for so many of the ancient first century Jews because they were looking for a political king, one who would step in and rescue them, free them from the boot of Rome, that they could be their own sovereign nation again. And Jesus comes and he says, that's not why I'm here. I am here to be king of your hearts. So in this story that Jesus is telling, he's basically telling a story about himself saying, I have come into the world to be the king of the world, but it's very interesting. There's this delegation of people who don't really want Jesus to be king. And they go to the overall king and they say, we don't want this guy. Which is exactly what happens to Jesus. It is primarily exactly what happens to Jesus. Jesus comes and announces why he is there and they say, well, that's not really what we're after. And then God does what God does best. He simply says, well, you're wrong in this. He's going to be king anyways. The servants who are given the minas, that's us. We are those servants. Those are the big kind of big dots of this story. The big picture of this is that we are those servants. It's kind of interesting in this story. There are he gives minas to 10 servants, but Jesus only talks about 3 of them. And it's really easy in looking at the 3 servants. One is given, he earns 10, another earns 5, and one doesn't earn anything. And it's really easy to start comparing those. Well, maybe the guy who didn't do anything, he didn't really have the right opportunities. And maybe the first guy just got lucky. He was around the right person at the right time and invested the money and he got more of a return than the second servant. Don't we do this? Don't we compare? We kind of cross our stories and we compare with other people what's going on. Ever been around someone who was more talented than you? Probably most of us, yeah. If you're having trouble with that, just think back to your high school days, because in high school, we're all wrestling with our identity, and they're better at what I really want. Yeah, but you're better than, but I don't want what I have. I want what they have, right? We compare our stories. Or maybe you've been around, or maybe you have been the kind of person that has always compared yourself to someone else and said, all right, I'm smarter than them. She's better looking than me, but I'm better looking than her. And so we are always kind of comparing ourselves against one another. Isn't it good to know, and this story is evidence of this, that God doesn't compare us with one another. He simply judges us based on us. God says to these three individuals that Jesus is telling the story about, he doesn't judge them against, well, you only earned five when the first one earned 10, and shame on you. He doesn't do that. He said, you've been trustworthy with a little bit, I'm going to give you more. The same thing with the first. You've been trustworthy with a little bit, I'm going to give you more. He does not compare the last servant against the other two. He simply says, you chose to do nothing with what I gave you. Nothing at all with what I gave you. I think this struggle of comparison is difficult. Jesus tells this story and removes the idea that God is going to judge us one against another. God is only going to judge us. He is only going to weigh our lives in the balance based on what we have been given. And it's kind of interesting, you know, we are obsessed in our country with fairness, but this isn't a new thing because it shows up in this story. Jesus gives the talent from the one servant who did nothing with it. He takes it from him and gives it to the one who has the most. And there's immediately this cry back, well, God, that's not fair. That's not fair at all, God. Well, I mean, 11, that's more than 6. And shouldn't we give the extra one to the one with 7 so that it's a little closer? I mean, shouldn't that be what we do? And God, Jesus basically responds here and says, it's not about fairness. It is about what you have done with what you have been given. And if you have been faithful in small things, you're going to be trusted with greater things. The last servant is kind of interesting. The last servant does something I think that all of us do at one point or another. We project onto others, and in this specific instance, he projects onto the king, that the king is harsh and he's not fair. Because he says, I knew that you were a hard man. And what he's basically saying is, I didn't think that I could please you, and I got scared, and so I went and I hid my money so that at the very least you would get back what you gave me. Because if I lost your money in some sort of investment that went sideways, I don't know what would happen to me. So it's better to just give you back what you had given me in the first place so that I don't risk getting killed, because that's what you would do. Ever been around people that project onto God the dissatisfaction with their own lives? God, you are blessed. I look around me and I see you blessing this people and you're blessing those people and you're blessing that church and they just have, and I don't have anything, God. What's going on with that, God? Why did you give me nothing? And everywhere I look, I see God's blessing, God's blessing, God's blessing. What's happening by and large in that kind of instance is we have become dissatisfied with our own lives. And wishing that we were something else and saying, well, God, you didn't give me anything. And I think that God looks at that and he says, how dare you call useless what I have given you? Because in this story that Jesus is telling, the master, the king, comes back and he says, you are a lazy and a wicked servant. Lazy I get. Because he didn't do anything, right? He just went and he hid the money and sat on it and didn't just, maybe he just bided his time until the king gets back. But then he says, not only are you lazy, but you are wicked. That seems harsh, doesn't it? Wicked. I can understand wicked if he took the money and didn't invest in it, he just blew it all. Spent it all on wild parties, he went to Vegas and he did all kinds of crazy stuff with the money and returns empty-handed with nothing. I get wicked there. He doesn't hire an assassin to kill someone with the money. That would be wicked, right? He simply sits on what he has been given and does nothing with it. Could it be that God looks at the things that he has infused into our lives and how we choose to use or not use them? And if we choose not to use them, the things that God has put in our spirits and our refusal to use, our neglect of those gifts, could it be that God looks at that neglect as wicked? Because we have wasted the very thing that God has put in front of us for us to use. I think that might be true. I've read this story and I've looked at this story 100 times before coming to this week and never really thought about that. But I think that could be true. That how we use the things that God has put in our lives, the passions, the desires, the talents, and our willingness to use those things at all costs, I think that God looks at that and says, you're either going to use them well or you're going to waste them. And if you waste them, it is a wicked person who decides to waste what God has placed in their lives. The response of the king in this story says, "Well done, faithful servant. Well done. You have been faithful with a little." In this word, faithfulness, two words, faith and fullness. Faith has this appeal, I think, to us, especially if you're following Christ. There is a sense that faith matters. Faith is important, because if I don't have faith in God, then everything else kind of begins to fall apart. And my faith in my church or in my leaders, that is important. So faith has this understanding that when you, for instance, we'll just keep it within a church conversation, a Christian conversation, when you pray for someone to get well, you have faith that God is going to answer that. And then if they get well, your faith grows, right? Your faith increases. And so you have this experience where it gets larger. Or if you can remember back to when you first began a relationship with Christ, you got saved. Maybe someone said to you, "It's all about faith. Everything that you do, everything that you are wondering about, it's all about faith. There just needs to be this blind faith that you need to trust that God has what is best in mind for you." And there was faith attached to that whole kind of mindset, that approach to life. Then we talk about the issue of fullness. This is when something is brought to completion, when it is fulfilled. There is a reality that is realized. And it changes over the course of time, that your faith should grow and become something more. I kind of wonder if we can use as an image, as a demonstration, or a picture of our faith, if we could demonstrate this through shaving cream. When I first started shaving, Barbasol. Anybody else start with this stuff? Yeah. I think my dad still uses this, as a matter of fact. Barbasol, boy, when I remember starting to use Barbasol, I would use a lot, because I'm a man, and I need to use a lot of Barbasol. And you would spread this all over the face, and that was, man, the more you use, the better it felt, right? And you remember those first shaving episodes? Smells kind of good. That's how you know it's good. It has that kind of weird, almost burning smell to it. Barbasol still smells like that. It's unbelievable. So I remember using Barbasol as the beginning spot, and the more that I used, it seemed like the better it worked. And then if this is a metaphor, if this is a picture for my faith, early on, my faith was all over the place. It was loud. I wanted people to know about it, and so it was something that kind of oozed out all over the place. And then as I moved on in my shaving experience, then I found Edge shave gel. And Edge shave gel was cool because it came out blue. And then it slowly started to change. Edge shave gel was different because it came out blue, it turned white, but then it also got big. It grew a little bit, right? Smells different. This has got soothing aloe in it. This smells interesting, but they don't even tell you what it is. It's just, this is how Barbasol smells, apparently. This is their standard scent. So my faith was, maybe it was a little more edgy when I got into high school or college, and it was different. But Edge shave gel is different than Barbasol because you don't need as much, right? You kind of spread that stuff out on your, and ladies, you have to trust me, you kind of spread that stuff out on your face, and it grows and it changes and it feels different than Barbasol, but you don't need as much. But then there was this other thing that came out. This is called shave cream. And this stuff, you don't need much of this. In fact, it even says directions. Word for word. "Unlike shave foams and gels, a thin layer is all you need." That doesn't seem right, though, because this is small. This is only 5 ounces. This is 10 ounces. This has got to be a lot better, right? Because there's more of it, and you need more if you're going to do it right. But this says you don't need as much. Further directions. "Massage a quarter size amount on wet skin and neck." A quarter size amount of this doesn't get you very far, does it? Even a quarter-sized amount of this, even though it grows, it's not enough. But there's something different about this stuff. You don't need that much. And if we're to continue with the metaphor of shaving cream as a picture for our faith, if you and your faith and your relationship with God, if you're still stuck in Barbasol, there is something more. Now, if you use this stuff to shave, I'm not cracking on your habits in the bathroom. This is a metaphor. I wonder if sometimes we get stuck in the experience in which we came to God and experienced Him. And we say, it's got to look just like that, or it's not really God, or my relationship with God isn't all that great, because it's got to look the same as when I first came to God. And I think along the way, God is saying, I have so much more for you. I have something that's larger, something that is better, something that's easier to use, something that is more applicable, something that fits your life better. And we keep going back to the same experience and say, but God, I really want you back here. And God is saying, no, come into the future. I have something more for you. I have something better for you. It's a handful of statements that I think can help us along this. Faith, and I think these are on the screen as well. Faith is what brings us to God. Faithfulness is what saves us. See, your experience when you and I first have this relationship, this encounter with God, it is brand new. And maybe it's unlike anything you've ever experienced. If you can remember your conversion experience and what that was like, has it changed from then to now? Because faith is what brings us to God. There comes this place where we decide, all right, I'm done trying to do this on my own. My faith has brought me to this point. But just like you and I continue to grow, the longer we live, our bodies change, our minds change, our relationships and our habits change. God is saying, your faith needs to change. So your faithfulness is what saves us. The next one says, a life without faith will limit you. A life without faithfulness will destroy you. See, if you and I are trying to live this spiritual experience as soul revolution, but we are not allowing the faithfulness of God to invade our every moment, it will crush us. Because we're trying to do something on our own that we were never designed to do on our own. A life without faithfulness will destroy us. Faith is how you meet God in the present, stepping into this moment right now. And trusting that He has something for us. So faith is how we meet God in the present. Faithfulness is how we meet God in the future. It is what takes us into the very place. See, our faith, when we first encounter God or we encounter something new, God is saying there is something greater for you. And here's maybe a little sliver of the future. But our faithfulness propels us into that future. Reminds us that God has something massive in store for us. Now, if you've been around church for very long and you remember this story, you may also be aware there's a parallel story that Jesus tells in Matthew 25. You don't have to turn there. We're not actually going to read through this story, but it is essentially the same story. And maybe it was, and Jesus teaches through stories, through parables, and so in a different location or setting, He may have changed some of the details. So this is the same story that Jesus tells. He tells the story about the talents. And a master that goes away and he gives to his servants some talents. Talents was a form, a measure of money. It's the money is smaller in that story than this, but that doesn't really matter. But the same thing happens. There are two servants that do what they can to multiply the money that they have been given. And the third servant says, I didn't do anything with it. I buried it in the ground. I knew that you were difficult. I knew that you were a problem, that you were maybe a harsh, difficult master, and I didn't want to disappoint you, so I just buried it. And the same thing happens. The master comes back and he says, well done to the first two servants. You've been faithful with a little bit. I want to give you more. And then the third one, he says, you are lazy and wicked. Because he was given the opportunity to do something. And instead neglected the gifts and talents that he had been given. I kind of wonder if this neglect of the things that God has put in our lives is a form of high treason against God. Because he has said, you are valuable. You are worth it. It's kind of interesting. I was driving home, driving back from North Bradley this morning to come here, there was a just the image of a young lady that I know. And this young lady is kind of a mess. I mean, she is kind of boisterous and, put this nicely, irritating, and just difficult to be around. And part of that, everybody knows that about her. But as I was driving here, I could not get her face out of my mind. And then the thought occurred to me, I wonder if anyone has ever told her that she is worth it, that she matters, that she is important. I have no idea, because I know a little bit about her home situation, and it's not great, but it's not the worst I've ever seen. I know that her parents love her, but there is something broken about this young lady. And I wonder if she's ever been told that she is worth it, that she matters, that she is important. And the reason I even thought of this just now, God is saying to each of us that we are worth it. The things that He has placed in your life, in my life, He is saying, you matter. And it's so easy to play the comparison game and say, well, I wish I had that group of skills and abilities. All I have is this. And God is looking at you saying, I have equipped you to do something specific, something unique that only you can accomplish. And if we step away from that and say, yeah, I don't want that, though, I kind of wonder if it's a form of high treason against God, because God has said to us, I have made you, I have knit you together. I know you in your inmost spirit. And if we push away from that and we say no to that, we're saying no to what God has done and placed in our lives. See, because it is not about what we do with what someone else has. It is not about the comparison of, I wish I had that. It is about what God has placed in our lives today, right now. The question for us today is this. Have you allowed your faith to grow, or are you still stuck in the early stages of your faith? Have you been faithful with small things? Have you been faithful with the little pieces that God has given you? Now, if you're a parent, if you've been or you have kids at home right now, you understand this, because part of parenting is giving your kids a little bit of space and seeing if they can handle it, right? We have, in the last couple of weeks, we have a newly licensed driver living in our house. I know, there's a little bit of, I don't know if I like this. But all of a sudden it occurred to me, wait a minute, you can go get your brother from his friend's house and I don't have to go? I can stay here. I don't even have to put shoes on. I'm going to go take a nap. All right, we'll see you later. Now, the process of getting to the place where we trust that new driver has been a long process, and it should be. Early on, before Abby ever even took the initial class, we did a little bit of driving here, and we went over to the cemetery, and that was a little bit scary at times, because she's trying to figure out how to maneuver and manipulate the car. But eventually, over the last year, she's taken more of the classes, and she's driven all over the state with us. It got better and better and better, and trust with little things. She has been faithful with little things in learning to drive. Now, I'm going to brag on her for just a minute. She went down and took the test in St. John's, and I wasn't able to go, so Jenny went with her. And he, after the test was all over, he said, you missed three. Now, I don't know what the scale is. Jen said, I don't know what the scale is either. Is that good? Can you only miss five? I mean, are we like real close to not getting through this? And then he said this, you're one of the best young drivers I have seen in a long time. She had friends who missed double digits, and they still got their license. I don't know what the scale is. I have no idea. But Abby has been faithful in little things to learn how to be a good driver, and it continues to pay off. And now we have this sense that we can trust her with bigger things. So she takes my car to school sometimes, and I like my car. I would like to see my car come back. We haven't had any troubles. It's been great. God is continuing to put in front of us the opportunity to be faithful with little things so that, see, God is priming the pump with us on a continual basis, saying, I want to trust you with something bigger. But you and I have to go through this testing period, this place where we respond to the little things that God is asking us to do. We live in a culture that loves the big show, the big bang, and I think that we sometimes look at God and say, well, God, if you just put me on the big stage, if you would just create this massive arena for me to speak to, or whatever my biggest, craziest, most audacious dreams are, put me in that spot. And God is saying, in order to get to that spot, there's all this other stuff, this little work that you and I have to be a part of, that we have to do. God continues to make us ready for the day when he says, I want to trust you with big things now. But we have to be faithful in the little things. So this morning, as we kind of close this part of our service, and we're going to be invited to sing and to pray together and just to experience the presence of God, I wonder if there are little things that you need to start being faithful in. Maybe little things that God has been prompting and putting in front of you. And for one reason or another, we have just kind of pushed away from that and said, I don't know if I want to do that now. Maybe today is the moment where we accept those little things. And maybe you have been doing the small things, that you've been faithful in the little things. Maybe that has been a picture of most of your life. But as God has kind of poked you in the heart, he's inviting you into larger things. And for one reason or another, you have pushed away from that and said, boy, I don't know, that seems bigger than me. I don't know if I could handle it. I don't know if I could do that. Maybe today is the moment that you say, all right, God, you have trusted me with all these little things. And I have loved doing the little things. I'm going to trust you in the middle of this big thing that you're inviting me into. Maybe this tracks back to your generosity from last week, that God is simply inviting you, pulling you to the place where you can be generous with all that you have, your finances, your time, your ability, your talents, and not neglect those things any longer. Whatever it is that God is speaking to you about, he is able to answer those questions if you and I would only make the space in our hearts for him. Father, this morning as we shift gears and we spend some time in worship, and we take moments to be grateful for the life that you are inviting us into, we take moments to be aware of the great and massive thing that you are calling us, the life that you are opening up in our hearts. For some of us, that is this intimidating, kind of scary experience. For some of us, we're not sure that we can deliver on what you're asking. Maybe you're simply asking to begin a relationship with us and we're kind of afraid of what that might mean to the rest of our lives, how it might impact us. God, for some of us, we are aware of maybe the neglect that has been a part of our lives. We've not engaged in the things that bring honor and glory to you. We're wrestling with this overwhelming sense of guilt and heaviness. Father, whatever the case is, we know that by drawing closer to you, it changes our hearts. So Lord, give us the courage to move closer to you. May we not stand off at a distance. Thank you for being in this place, in this moment. In Jesus' name, amen.